It's time for another session of Rawpalooza, 2012 Raw Food World Summit. And now, here's your host, Steve Prusak.
Welcome to our keynote presenter for today. It's Dr. Will Tuttle. He's a pianist, composer, educator, and author. He's lectured widely throughout North America and Europe as well. He's the author of The World Peace Diet, which is a number one Amazon bestseller, and recipient of the Courage of Conscience Award. An environmental, animal rights, and peace activist and writer for 25 years, he's been traveling full-time with his spouse Madeline in their solar-paneled RV for the past 15 years, presenting 100 to 150 lectures, retreats, workshops, and concerts annually. A 31-year vegan and former Zen Buddhist monk, his PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, focused on educating intuition and altruism in adults, and he's taught college courses in creativity, humanities, mythology, religion, and philosophy. Dr. Will Tuttle will be offering a Rawpalooza show special in honor of his keynote presentation. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. We'll talk about that more later in the call. But right now, let's welcome to Rawpalooza Dr. Will Tuttle. Hi, Dr.
Hi,
Will.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, hi. Good to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us, you know, because we know this is Raw Food and Conscious Living Expo, and we know that food is one part of it, and I know personally a lot of people get into the raw food diet and only to find it's not working and end up going back and eating the standard American diet and meats and dairy, and really we wanted you as a keynote presenter to really bring the idea of the vegan message into the raw food movement, so thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. I'm happy to participate in this. I think sounds like a fantastic event from what I've heard. And I think that the raw food movement, the living food movement, has got enormous potential to help transform people's lives in a positive way. And I agree with you. I think the vegan sensibility, really the ethical perspective, adds a lot to anyone who's doing a raw food diet.
Perfect. And so we just want to turn the microphone over to you for a while here. So, I mean, I know you're so great at this, getting this message out, and you do it all over the world. So I don't want to get in your way of that. I really want you to just have enough time to present all the information so everyone could receive it, and then we can talk more later. But let's talk about the main message in the World Peace Diet as it relates to raw food.
Great, Steve. Yeah, you know, most people, I think, who are drawn to a raw food diet and are doing away with cooked food are looking for something. You know, there are people who are willing to question the underlying assumptions of our culture and the food and to really make some changes in their lives at a deep level, because when we switch to a raw food diet or more raw food and get to a pretty high percentage of raw food, we start to do a lot of cleansing and physically, but I think also probably emotionally as well. And the cleansing process is really a process of letting go of old baggage, not only physical baggage, but emotional and intellectual baggage as well, because all of us have an enormous amount of stuff that we've accumulated through even, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years of living in this culture. And so what I like to emphasize primarily is that we're all born into a culture that forces all of us, from a time we're just infants, really, to engage in meal rituals which are absolutely antithetical to our own best interests and also to the interests of the environment, of this beautiful earth that we share, as well as our culture and future generations. And we're all interconnected. That's probably the main message, is the fact that we're all interconnected. We're interconnected with other species, with other humans, with future generations, with the living ecosystems and of this planet. And that being drawn toward a raw food diet is a great step, and I think it's fantastic because essentially we're going to be moving toward a more plant-based diet. I think, though, if it's only done because of concerns about personal purity and health, then it's a relatively shallow motivation, and it's a good motivation in the beginning, I think, and it can help us to move really in a very positive direction in our lives on a lot of levels, and we can find great healings, physical healings as well as other kinds of healings happening. And that's all well and good. That's terrific. And we're also really contributing, I think, to a better world. The problem as I see it, though, is if the motivation stays merely at the level of personal purity and personal health, then it's pretty easy when the going gets tough and we're faced with friends and neighbors and colleagues and family and so forth and situations which make it difficult, perhaps, to stay on the raw food diet. It's easy to cheat here and cheat there. And I think that very often people who are moving toward a raw food diet, and when they face those kinds of difficulties, if they don't have a deeper ethical orientation and understanding, then they'll go back, as you were saying, to eating animal foods quite a bit. I've seen it happen. I've actually seen it happen quite a few times. So I think it's really great to also begin to open up to what I see as a more comprehensive motivation in our lives, and to look deeply at why we're on this planet as individuals. You know, why am I here? What's my purpose? How can I live authentically? How can I contribute to the world in a way that's meaningful, and what am I here for? And to, you know, as we contemplate that, we see that we all have been indoctrinated really from a very early age with ideas about why we're here, and a lot of it has to do with consuming and becoming successful and so forth, that happiness lies in the outer world. And I'm here to tell people, really, that success and happiness come from inner cultivation, from connecting with the inner powers and resources that we have as individuals and as spiritual beings, and that food can be a powerful tool. I think it is actually always a powerful tool, either negatively or positively. And if we're eating foods that cause others to be hyper-confined and castrated and mutilated and harmed, and then we're eating those foods, we're really contributing in many ways not only to violence towards these animals, but also to violence towards the people who have to do this work, as well as violence toward people who are going hungry because we're feeding grains that could easily feed hungry people, and legumes to cows for meat and for milk, and to goats for dairy products and meat, and to chickens for eggs and for meat, and to fish for meat, and other animals for meat. And this causes a lot of suffering because starving people, we're actually at the point today where we've got about 1.2 billion people who are chronically hungry on this planet, and when we're growing enough food to feed between 12 and 15 billion people. So there's no reason for anyone to be hungry. And we have, close to 20,000 children every day are dying of starvation. These are things that I think we have to really be conscious about and realize that if I'm taking out my wallet and paying for animal-based foods, that I'm in very real way contributing directly to the kinds of inequity that are causing war and hunger and violence on this planet. So it's really very wonderful, I think. It's a very empowering and beautiful understanding to realize that as I eat lower on the food chain and eat a more plant-based diet, that I'm reducing suffering not only to animals but to human beings as well as to ecosystems. And that's a whole other long conversation, which I won't get into too much, but just that eating animal-based foods really is devastating to the environment, no matter how they're raised. There's people that say, well, you know, if factory farming is bad, but if I have organic dairy or organic eggs or free-range you know, meat or whatever, if I go out and kill my own animal, then it's okay. And yet, and there are people, raw foodists or former raw foodists, who are advocating all these things. But I personally, I think if we looked into this at all in any kind of depth, we realize very quickly that, first of all, this is always causing terror and fear and pain and suffering to these other beings. And it's completely unnecessary, because all of us can thrive on a plant-based diet when we know what we're doing. And so we look at the environmental impacts of hunting. They're devastating, really. Hunting both animals of the land and hunting animals of the water, which is called fishing typically, are devastating the ecosystems, and I see it all the time. And, I guess I don't need to go into that, but it's clearly happening. I mean, the over-hunting of both land and water animals is contributing significantly to the population declines of these animals, and we're facing mass extinctions of a lot of animals right now due to loss of habitat from eating meat and cutting down forests to grow grain to feed factory-farmed fish and chickens and pigs and cows all over the world, as well as hunting, both big-game hunting, trophy hunting, as well as shooting deer and squirrels and birds and ducks and geese and everything else that people do all over the place. So all these things are unnecessary, and besides hardening our hearts towards animals and lessening our sense of being connected to a benevolent universe, they cause very real violence and devastation to ecosystems and to the web of life, and harm other human beings also. So the basic idea, I guess, Steve, really, is that our happiness flows really from our own mind, from our own consciousness, and it flows from our way of relating to the apparently outer world. You know, in a very real sense, the outer world is very much connected to our consciousness. And so if I'm dealing with the outer world that's arising in my consciousness and in my life around me in a way where I'm acting in violence toward it, I'm manipulating others, I'm taking out my wallet and paying for people to confine cows so I can have their dairy products, or confine chickens so I can have their eggs, own them as property, even if it's organic, it's still what's happening. And it's causing suffering to these animals. It's slavery, and slavery is not freedom. And so if I'm sowing those seeds and I'm supporting that, then I'm actually sowing the seeds of the same thing to happen to me, because the fundamental truth that is really unavoidable is that whatever seeds we sow will come to fruition in our own experience. So if I'm sowing seeds of violence and slavery, and if I'm stealing the purposes of others because I want, because I want to eat them or eat their products, and that desire typically is rooted merely in cultural programming. No one would think on their own of stealing the milk of another bovine animal. I mean, we don't think, go around thinking we want to drink the milk of dogs or cats or elephants or other animals. It's just merely cultural programming that sort of forces us into these ideas. So we have to question that. But the basic idea is that if I engage in these behaviors, I'm sowing the seeds of unhappiness in these animals and other human beings, and also in myself. And we may not realize it directly, because our culture is very good at disconnecting us really from the ramifications of our own actions. We don't see the ramifications very easily, but the fact that we are experiencing depression or insomnia or a sense of frustration or having psychological problems of various kinds, or physical problems of various kinds, or a sense of spiritual disconnectedness. You know, all these things are very, very important, you know, to us as individuals living on this earth. It's very important, I think, for us to realize that we have within our own hands the capacity to create a life of joy and freedom and peace and meaning, to live authentically. However, in order to do that, we must question the underlying practices of our culture and the underlying attitudes and mentality. And as I explain in the World Peace Diet, and I'll just do it briefly here, the essential mentality in our culture that really is injected into all of us from the time we're little kids, because it's really unavoidable. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do as raw foodists is to purify ourselves from this mentality. And essentially the mentality that is required to kill 75 million animals every single day for food, as we do in the United States, for example, is a mentality that is not in our best interest. It's a mentality of reductionism, of reducing beings to mere commodities or to things that we buy and sell. It's a mentality of predation, of learning to see other beings as beings that I can harm for my own benefit, which is really essentially a mentality of might makes right, which goes against every ethical, spiritual, moral, and cultural teaching, wisdom teaching. And yet, because we know it, at a deep level, it causes nothing but misery for everyone. If you have a culture where might makes right, no one is protected from those who would exploit and oppress others. So but that's the underlying subtext of every meal if we're eating meat, dairy products, and eggs. Animal foods require that, require us to disconnect from our spiritual wisdom. And so it's this mentality also of privilege and elitism, again, because the subtext of every meal, if I'm eating animal foods, is that certain beings are superior to others and they have the right to use those inferior beings however they want. And so this mentality of elitism and privilege and inequity, which we see, you know, just rampant in our culture today, really gets its traction in our own consciousness through forcing us as children to, every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, eat meat, dairy products, and eggs. And so how can we hope to heal this in our outer world if we're eating it every day and continuing that? And it's also essentially a mentality of exclusion, of learning to exclude other beings. And really, I think what we realize as we go on a spiritual path and on a path of growing in wisdom is that we are not fundamentally separate, that happiness comes from cultivating a mentality of inclusion, of treating others, all others, with compassion, not only some others with kindness, but really including everyone with compassion, that until we do that, we are going to have a world at war. And who wants a world at war? There's no way that's going to bring us happiness. So the idea is to include others, even those who our culture says don't deserve our compassion, beings like cows and pigs and fish and chickens. These animals have interests. Their interests are to them as important to them as my interests are to me. And if I just go along with the cultural slavery program that says, well, you know, their interests don't matter, then I'm simply sowing seeds of misery for myself, because when I treat these animals with violence by paying people to harm them and then buy their products, I'm essentially enslaving myself, because I'm cultivating this mentality of exclusion. And exclusion never brings happiness. It always brings misery and unhappiness, because it perpetuates the myth of being a fundamentally separate, solitary self. And that's the basic delusion that causes all suffering and all unhappiness. We have to awaken to the truth that what we are is far greater than that, that what we are is part of an unfolding of life on this beautiful planet, and that we have unique gifts to give and to share with others in a spirit of mutuality and cooperation, and that's what brings us real significance and happiness. And then the final thing, too, in this whole thing is that to kill 75 million animals every day for food requires us to cultivate a mentality where we are chronically repressing the feminine dimension of consciousness, which I refer to in the World Peace Diet as Sophia. Sophia is the Greek goddess of wisdom, and this is a living power within everyone. Whether we're men or women, we have the feminine capacity that yearns to nurture and protect life, the mothering aspect that will give her life for her baby, and that we can cultivate that, all of us, that we would really give our lives to bless others, to help others, instead of living a life that's self-centered, where I would take someone else's life, steal from them so I can have for myself. We're called to act in ways that are nurturing and protecting and giving, and that we find that this is what actually gives us the greatest happiness and joy. That if I'm acting selfishly, it never works in the long run. We end up unhappy and unloved, because the way to be loved is to be loving. So this is the essential wisdom teaching, and yet eating animal foods, we are cultivating a mentality that's utterly in the opposite of that. We're cultivating a mentality that's the complete opposite of that. And so I think, you know, for raw foodists to really go beyond the shallow understanding that, oh yes, if I just don't cook my food and eat in this way, I'm going to have all these enzymes, I'm going to have more energy, I'm going to sleep less, I'm going to get rid of the extra weight, and I'm going to be a happy person. You know, that's great as a beginning, and I applaud people for actually acting on that in the face of all the resistance that comes up, not only within our own minds, but in the minds of other people. But I think to go beyond that and see that this is really a path of the heart, you know, it's a path of becoming a force for the healing of the planet, and that when we cultivate this understanding, we're really talking about transforming all of our relationships with not only with animals but with other human beings, so that we're not using or abusing others for our own benefit. And we start with what's on our plates. So that's, I think, you know, what I'd like to emphasize is that when we're eating a plant-based diet for ethical reasons, we're essentially doing the absolutely most powerfully positive, benevolent thing anyone in our culture can do today, because our food system is the most powerful connection we have, not only with our culture and the programming of our culture, as I've been talking about, but it's also the most powerful connection we have with the earth. And we are devastating this planet right now in ways that are shocking. I mean, to me, I'm continually really horrified by the amount of violence that eating an animal-based diet requires. We're cutting down now over an acre per second of Amazonian rainforest. I mean, this is a huge, you know, a huge thing, an acre per second. And it's the driving force behind it is to cut down trees so that we can grow soybeans to feed to factory-farmed cows and pigs and chickens and fish. We're completely overfishing the oceans on this planet, again, to feed not only human beings, but scientists have discovered that if you feed fish meal to cows and pigs and chickens and to other fish that are factory farmed, then you know, the animals get fat more quickly, and they give more milk and they give more eggs. So we have this incredible demand for fish, which has wiped out the fish. I mean, over 90% of all the large fish in the oceans are gone. They're just gone. They're just killed. They're gone. The oceans are just are being completely destroyed by overfishing. And then we have the a massive amount of water that's required, of petroleum, of land, of pollution that's created, the global destruction of weather stability caused by methane and nitrous oxide gases from animal agriculture, melting the poles and causing huge amounts of destruction to ecosystems. Coral reefs are really the main place where fish really thrive in the oceans, and there's a wide variety of marine life, and they're being bleached and killed by overfishing, by rising temperatures, by acidification of the water, which is caused by all the pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers that are used in animal agriculture. So in terms of the actual devastation of the earth, there's nothing worse than eating animal foods. And in terms of cultural devastation and war and violence of humans towards humans, there's really nothing worse than animal agriculture. And then with the raw food movement understands, I think, in terms of our own physical health, there's really nothing worse for us to eat than to eat animal-based foods, because they're rich in saturated fat and cholesterol and animal protein, which basically acidifies our tissues and our blood, and contributes to the whole range of diseases that we have in this culture that caused gigantic profits to go to the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry. The diseases like diabetes and osteoporosis and obesity and heart disease, quite a few different forms of cancer, autoimmune diseases, kidney disease, liver disease. And these are all coming from this essential high animal food diets that we're all in many ways indoctrinated against our will into eating. So to question all this, I think, from the point of view of a raw food diet is much to be applauded. And I hope that I've been able to explain here, Steve, the some of the other aspects of this, which, you know, I could go into it in more depth. But the basic idea is that the universe is set up, I think, in a way that the more kind and loving we are to others, essentially seeing others with respect, the more we're going to have self-respect for ourselves and the more happy we will be. It's not that the universe is set up by you know, some kind of Monsanto deity where the more you can cheat and steal and kill and lie and enslave others against their will, the happier you're going to be. I mean, that's exactly, and the irony is these families that engage in these behaviors, the very wealthy ones, it'd be one thing if they were happy, but if you look deeply into these families, you'll see that they have extremely high rates of misery, of drug addiction, of violence, and of sexual perversion, and lots of other things. So the best thing for us to do as human beings is to question all of the indoctrination that comes from the mass media. I mean, I mean question everything, and to infuse the living food practice with an ethical and spiritual and psychologically oriented perspective, where we, and cultural perspective really, where we see that we're really on a path of awakening, you know, and we're on a path of getting happier on every level and being a greater and greater blessing in the world, and there's nothing stopping us from that when we understand this. So thanks, Steve, for the opportunity to kind of go on and on here, but I think that's what I want to say about
That was great, Will. Dr. Tuttle, that was just great messages and all that, and it just makes you think, how did we get so off track as a human race? Because this is something that goes on all over the world, where it became normal to kill and eat the animals in all kinds of ways, and every kind of animal, and it became more important than eating vegetables and fruit. I mean, my dad won't even have a meal if meat isn't included. He, you know, that and that's the mainstream. You know, that's the prevailing
right.
thought on this. How did we get so off track? I mean, was it all about money?
Yeah, well, you know, in the World Peace Diet, I have a chapter that goes into this a little bit, and I think it's very interesting. But the basic idea is that I think it's a relatively recent phenomenon. This is what anthropologists understand, that typically if you go way back, people were eating a much more plant-based diet. And actually, even here today, I mean, even in our culture, in our own country, if you go back, say, 100 years, before refrigeration and before there was this, you know, the invention of nitrogen-based fertilizers, it was really hard for people to eat a lot of meat like we can do today because it wasn't so inexpensive. It was hard to grow enough grain to feed all these animals, and so it was really only the wealthy elite that ate a lot of meat. Everybody, the masses, were eating basically a plant-based diet, and that's how it always was. And now, with the advent of this incredibly environmentally devastating practice of monocropping, where we grow just literally millions of acres of genetically engineered corn and soybeans, and then we feed that horrible stuff to animals, who then convert it into meat and milk and eggs. And so people are eating this stuff, which is genetically engineered, and these animals are miserable. They're eating misery and pain and fear and death and suffering and violence, as well as environmentally devastating genetically engineered crops. Who knows what it's causing in terms of health? But now, you know, meat and dairy are very cheap because of this and because of massive government subsidies. But it's something I think that just sort of grew. I'm not sure exactly, what really started it. But according to anthropologists, around 10,000 years ago in what is today Iraq, people for the first time started owning animals as property for food. We call that herding. And it started very small, it gradually grew. And I think this was the last revolution that our culture ever experienced, and it really changed everything. It started the widespread practice of warfare, of slavery, of a wealthy elite coming to power who owned most of the resources and who took control of most of the institutions. And these cultures basically evolved in the eastern part of the Mediterranean and spread throughout the Levant, into Central Asia, into Europe, around the Northern Mediterranean, came to the, of course, to our hemisphere, bringing these practices with them. Called very warlike cultures, very patriarchal cultures, with where the rich people ate a lot of meat, dairy products, and eggs, and this whole thing has been spreading. And I think the fact of the matter is, when we look at this historically, how it came about, we can see that it was something that created a massive split between the rich and the poor, and between animals and humans. The animals began to be seen as mere commodities to be used. They became despised. They were no longer respected. The earth was more and more seen as merely property to be used for resources. And warfare became more widespread, and slavery became widespread. And we have capitalist economic systems that are based on essentially a few getting rich at the expense of many. And this whole thing is founded on eating animal foods, essentially. It's on the practice of eating animal foods. The very first word for war, for example, is the ancient Sanskrit word gavya. So I think if people want to look into this more deeply, it's very, very interesting. I think it's very liberating to understand that this is not something that's been going on, forever. It's a relatively recent development in human history, and that it's something that we can change. It's something, we don't have to continue on with this. We can evolve to a higher level, to a more conscious level. We can question the official stories. I think one of the most important things anyone can do is to question official stories, this official story that you will not get enough protein if you don't eat meat and dairy and eggs, that kind of official story, or the official story that we have teeth that allow us to tear flesh, that's why, or that animals are made from meat, that's so if they're made from meat, we're supposed to eat them. all these sort of official stories that we hear, they're really stories, I would say, that in many ways are in place in order to enslave us. And they work very well to do that. And if we want to be free, if we want to be happy and at peace and be creative, then we had better question these stories. It's almost like an intelligence test. Someone who does not question these stories is going to end up very sick, very stupid, very quickly. I mean, that's basically what happens. People don't realize it, but if we don't question these stories, we're eating horrible junk, which is polluting our bodies and minds. We're going to end up debilitated, disempowered, and enslaved. And so, who anyone can resonate with these ideas, then it shows they have some natural intelligence functioning, and the whole idea is to increase that, to cultivate that, to question the stories more, and to make a life that is a living testimony of the beauty and the power that is ours to share and to understand and to cultivate and to awaken to. And as we do that, we open up new horizons of well-being, not only for ourselves, but for others, because we are all interconnected. The more intelligent we become in the true systemic sense of intelligence as being, the power to make connections that are meaningful for us, the more we contribute to the healing of our world. And I think there's nothing more important today than to question everything and no one has to believe what I'm saying. You know, go online and find out. And if anyone is interested, actually, maybe I should mention this, in finding out more about this, because this is something I really don't have time to go into, the whole history of this. But we have this World Peace Diet Mastery program that goes into this more in depth. And I think, you know, reading the World Peace Diet and just contemplating these ideas, go online. I invite everyone, of course, to do that and do your own research. But we have also, we have programs that go in more depth into this, and we're happy to share those with people.
Yeah, I think it would be a good time to mention that the World Peace Diet Mastery Program is being offered as a Rawpalooza show special from Dr. Will Tuttle, and that's in your membership site for the Rawpalooza program under today's keynote presentation with Dr. Tuttle. There's a link where you can find out more about the special offer, and it's being offered at just $65, so it's a 30% discount. Thank you for that, Dr. Tuttle. That was an incredible program that I'm a big fan of, being that we created part of it together on the technical end. I was able to be part of that program, so thanks for that. Do you want to explain more about the World Peace Diet Mastery Program?
Well, yeah, just briefly, yes, Steve, and yeah, it was really, of course, it still is wonderful working on this with you. We're, there's so much to this understanding, and people came to me for quite a few years after the World Peace Diet was written and said, you know, I want to go into this more in depth. I want to understand this more. I want to share these ideas with other people. How can I really thrive as a vegan, and how can I be effective at living these teachings and sharing them with other people? And so we created the World Peace Diet Mastery Program, which is a 4-week program, and it's online, so you can start it when you'd like, and it goes for 4 weeks, and really at your own pace. It's basically self-paced also, and there's a whole series of audio teachings that you can download and listen to at your convenience that go more depth into the ideas in the World Peace Diet. There's web access to study guides, notes on all the modules, supplementary readings, overviews, media files. Plus, you also get a pass for the entire program for a study buddy, which is completely free. So basically, the price you mentioned, $65, actually is for two people. So you can sign up anyone you would like for free, and you can go through the program together. You also get two months in the World Peace Diet Circle, which is a twice a month teleconference. I'm on the phone with Steve and with anyone who signed up, and it's questions and answers with me. Plus, we have special guests on, well-known people in the vegan movement, and so it's an online training that includes direct access to me to answer questions, and so there's this whole four-week training with four modules, and it serves, I think, as a standalone kind of a training to just go more deeply into this if you'd like to become a coach or to perhaps have put on classes or to write or to do more education or to, in some way be part of this movement at a deeper level, then this is a great way to do it. And also it's a good foundation for the one other program that we're offering too, which is an 8-week training called the Facilitator Training, the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training, which leads to certification as a World Peace Diet Facilitator, which adds a whole nother 8 weeks and eight more modules, as well as more study guides, notes, readings, assignments that guide you toward becoming a World Peace Diet Facilitator, and as well as 3 months in the Facilitator Circle. So there's we're here to serve this movement and to help people to take the adventure, really, of self-discovery. And I think there's no greater adventure than this. I mean, there's no greater gift we can give to ourselves or to the world than to take the adventure of understanding the power of our food choices. It is amazing. It is immense. And in the short little 1 hour we have here, I mean, what we're talking about here is, you know, 4 hours, we're talking about 6 hours. Actually, that program, master program, is a good 6 hours, and then many other hours on top of that. So, yeah, it's really enormous amount to understand, but the understanding just grows and gets more and more interesting as time goes on, and more empowering as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Will. And again, that link is in the Rawpalooza website, the membership site for the program. If you're listening online, the link should be under the web player. And if you're listening on the phone, just go ahead and log into your membership site. This is only going to be available for a short time as part of this program. So thank you again, Dr. Tuttle. And in closing here, I know there's so much you can tell us. And, you know, to get this message, you really condensed it great here. I mean, amazingly well. So maybe you can just share a little about the spirituality and how that can tie into our food choices.
Sure. And I want to thank you, Steve, so much for taking the responsibility and the initiative to bring these teachings to the public, because I really think that the spiritual dimension of our lives is critically important. And, you know, we can live our lives, going along as intellectual beings and culturally programmed. But I think it's really not until we begin to connect with our intuition, which is our spiritual direct knowing, that we become really empowered and begin to see beyond the veil of illusions that pretty much covers our vision up until that point. Because if I'm basically relying on the cultural program to guide me in my life, then that's really what we're doing. If we're not relying on our intuition, we're relying on the cultural program, because the intellect and concepts and language are all programmed. And the whole program of this culture is basically to reduce our capacities so that we fit in to a pre-existing structure which serves a few but does not serve us and really does not serve the planet. And so once we begin to question all that, once we begin to rise up out of the state of being disconnected to our spiritual wisdom and begin to connect with our intuition, then we begin to be guided by our intuition, then we actually have an internal guidance system that we can rely on that will allow us to live our unique life and make the unique gift that we're here to give. We're not only living to consume and to fit in and to get by and to survive and all this stuff. We're now, when we're connected with our intuition, living at a whole higher, deeper level where our life is guided by higher principles. And we begin to see directly the interconnectedness of all life. We begin to see directly the beauty and magnificence of the earth and all creation and of the being that we are. And we begin to love life and all expressions of life. We begin to see the sacred in all life and to respect other living beings and to rejoice in their joys. And so instead of having this petty attitude of competition and of self-centered seeking, we begin to live our life from a higher level, and our food choices are going to reflect that. We're going to be naturally drawn towards the beautiful fruits and vegetables, the seeds and nuts that are freely given by the earth, and we begin to feel a harmony between ourselves and life. And we begin to yearn more and more to reduce the amount of violence we're causing to others. And all of these things will make our mind and heart happier. And so the essential spiritual teaching really is that as I am kind and loving to others, my own mind and heart are blessed. And we're all interconnected. You know, I keep saying this, but essentially, you know, what looks as good behavior on the outside is really simply the natural thing we would all do once we come home to our heart and see clearly. You know, we would realize that living the way our culture teaches us to live, looking through the lens with eyes that see objects, things to be used as instruments. How can I manipulate this person to make a sale? How can I manipulate the situation to work so that I come out on top? Or, you know, looking as a culture the way we do at animals, merely as things to be deceived and dominated for food and for research and for clothing and entertainment. You know, these things bring us misery and suffering because they skew our way of relating to ourselves and to the world in a way that is bound to cause us misery and cause others misery and create enormous ugliness. You know, I think spirituality brings beauty and brings inner peace because we realize that we're all in this together. And as Madeline and I, you know, living, as you mentioned, in an RV now, we're actually just 16 years, like you said, we're very aware of the ugliness. I mean, the essential ugliness of animal-based agriculture. Wherever we go, we travel around the entire North American landscape here, gradually moving, you know, from city to city, giving lectures and retreats and things. And the ugliness of monocropped agriculture, where everything is killed, only soy or corn is allowed to live there. Every animal and plant is killed off. The ugliness of these gigantic mechanized feedlot operations where these animals are stuck in their own manure and the smell is ugly, it looks ugly, it sounds ugly. And who would want to eat ugliness, eat this horrible ugliness, the dairy products that come out of this dark, black, polluted spaces, the eggs that come out of the miserable, hyper-confined, stinking sheds where these poor chickens are forced to live their lives, where the animals are driven into insanity by ugly surroundings of ammonia stench that is so horrible no one can even stand it, where the forests are cut down, the water is polluted, the air is polluted, the soil is destroyed, and these objects of ugliness are springing up everywhere. We see these grain silos where, you know, everything is metal and very, very ugly. And contrast that to the beauty of gardens where people are growing organic vegetables, the beauty of orchards where people are growing organic fruits and nuts, the beauty of working in harmony with nature. There's nothing more beautiful than the abundance of nature and the gardens and orchards and other ways we can live. If we do plant agriculture, not like we do animal agriculture, you know, essentially dominating the land with herbicides and chemicals, but we do our plant agriculture organically, and I would say veganically, without animal inputs at all, we find that the earth gives even more food. There's more abundance. We can grow much more food, and it's more delicious and nutritious than anyone can imagine. When we're living in harmony with the seasons, with the planets and the moon and the sun and the stars, and the earth and the water and the air, we can grow our own food. The earth would love to give us beautiful foods and is always giving us beautiful foods. We have to wake up from the stupidity of this trance of violence and domination of nature and animals and realize that the fundamental, most important thing we can do is to change our food and to help others to do the same thing. And if we don't do that, we will never have peace and freedom on this planet because our most intimate connection with nature is food. And if we do go vegan as a culture, we will create an entirely new world. It's inevitable. And it's happening. And we see recently the statistics that the number of vegans, apparently, according to a Harris poll, has doubled from 2009 up to 7.5 million people. So this is really positive news. There's a movement, there's a momentum that's growing, and it's really, I think, a spiritual revolution that's happening, a spiritual evolution and revolution, a benevolent revolution where just people are waking up and they're questioning the official stories. They're revolted by the ugliness, and instead of just complaining about it or attacking it, we can do something else, which is to create beautiful, delicious vegan meals, support organic farmers who are working in harmony with the earth, grow our own food. I really encourage everyone. You can all grow sprouts. You can, you know, we can all grow our own herbs and things, grow our own food, and create the revolution right where we are. And as we do that, we will see our world transforming, and we can create a world of peace and freedom and joy and beauty for ourselves and for future generations. And the way to do it is by questioning the diet of death, which is a corporate dominated system that only enriches a few at the expense of everyone else.
Wow. Dr. Will Tuttle right here in Rawpalooza with our keynote presentation. Dr. Tuttle, thank you so much for getting this message out there and on such a deep level. And I have no doubt this is getting through to all these people on the phone here, as well as people listening to this recording in the future. Thank you so much for your message.
Well, you're so welcome, Steve. And I really just send my love and gratitude to you and to everyone who's listening to these words. And I want to thank everyone for the efforts that you're making to help raise human consciousness on this planet so that we truly can live as we are intended to, as celebrations of life on this beautiful planet. Thanks again.
Thanks again.
Okay. Thanks. Take care.
And that was Dr. Will Tuttle on this session of Rawpalooza. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new day and a brand new lineup, so stay tuned.